Oh man, it's another week has gone by, and we still have not been attacked by aliens, as we were talking last week, which is good.
Frank claims he was probed, I think, by an alien.
I believe that.
Yeah, and, I think his name was George.
Have you ever seen the movie Fire in the Sky, which is based on
I haven't.
Supposedly true story about these three guys that are, and they claim they were abducted. And their stories are pretty fascinating. It's based on apparently true story. And the movie is freaky as hell. And the way they present the aliens and the way they're probed, so to speak. And it's an interesting concept to take, because these guys, their story is considered one of the best UFO stories out there. Because these guys' stories all match the stories they told and the recollection and their... They all passed lie detector tests and all this, and they were telling the truth.
Oh my God.
It's pretty crazy, man. That the stuff that those guys say they saw. I think only one of them was actually apparently abducted in the ship. I have the movie on my Vudu account. I've seen it a few times, and it's an interesting watch. If you want to watch a really cool alien abduction movie, watch Fire in the Sky. In fact, that would be a movie we could do on the show. You know, maybe now that I mention it, we'll put it. We don't have April and May filled out yet, and maybe we'll have to throw it in here in the next 6 weeks or so, and maybe do that movie. It's a pretty cool watch.
And that sounds like a good watch.
Yeah, it's freaky in a way that like it gets you really thinking. You're like, man, it'll stay with you a few days after you watch it. You're like, what did I watch? You know, like, was it real? And you know, because man, you know, I don't know if we talked about this last week, but I'm skeptically optimistic. I mean, I think there's something else out there, and I think they've been here. You know, I really do. I think there was no balloons in Roswell. I think they covered something up. I really do believe that,
dude.
Because there's been a lot of military people have come out over the years, and they said they saw stuff, and then there's even been cases
they have
of some
high ranking people.
Yeah. There have been high-ranking people that have suddenly disappeared after talking about it. And it makes you wonder, you know, what was going on back then. So, you know, I think it's a very real possibility that something we are not alone in the universe, you know. And we'll be okay, because we'll have Fox Mulder and Scully on the case. You know,
that's right. As long as they're still alive.
And the mysterious Smoky Man covering it all up.
Yes.
Man, that was a good show. One of my favorite shows. But this is the Rebel Radio Podcast. And as always, this is Mark and Matt hanging out with you on a Saturday night recording.
Saturday night, baby.
In an unseasonably warm weather for late February. Yeah. Even in Texas, I was like, son's baseball practice. I was like, God, it's fucking hot. I was like, what is this, man? Definitely, man, unseasonable for
humid.
Us. I can't remember the last time it got
weather
to
doesn't
80.
Know what it wants. Yeah,
it's been a few years since it's been the 80s in February. Generally, February, March, it stays about in the 60s and 70s, even in Texas.
Cold.
I can't remember
month.
The last time it got this warm. You know, I'm having to run the air conditioner and fans and shit. I'm like, what's going on here, man? You know, we've had some ball sweating weather the last week. It's like, but then there's a fucking snowstorm in California going on right now. That never happens. Like, what? Yeah, it doesn't snow
weather,
in California.
Someone pushed a bunch of buttons on the weather machine. That's what happened.
Leonardo DiCaprio is right, man.
He's
global
right.
Global warming and shit. But, you know, we were talking pre-show, man. You and me, I was talking about how I felt pretty good this week, had a little bit more energy, man. And in fact, enough energy that I was able to watch a couple of things besides this week's The Last of Us, which we'll talk about together in a few. But the first thing I watched was All Is Quiet on the Western Front, which is Netflix's movie version of the very famous book. Was written by a German soldier after World War I and his experiences in the war, and made into a 1930 film, which won the Best Picture Oscar and a lot of awards. It was remade again, I believe, in the 60s, but that version wasn't as well received. And Netflix's version isn't even a remake. It's just a retelling of the book. And man, this is a good film. It's brutal. It's brutally violent. And it's the first movie I've probably seen since Saving Private Ryan that makes you feel like you're in the war. Well, maybe Lone Survivor too. I don't want to disrespect those guys because what they went through, because
yeah,
Lone Survivor definitely put you in the soldier's boot, so to speak. And all the squad on the Western Front definitely put you in the soldier's boots, like Saving Private Ryan did. And it is relentless and it doesn't let up. And it tells a harrowing, frightful story of what these men went through in Germany during World War One. And
yeah, the trench warfare.
Yeah, the trench warfare. I can see why it's nominated for a bunch of Oscars, because it's definitely worthy. And it's one of those movies that when you're done, you're going to need a few moments of reflection and think about what those men went through. And really well acted. I mean, there's no stars in it because it's a German film, so they're probably mostly actors that we aren't familiar with. But everyone in the film is really good. It's beautifully shot. And interesting, it's definitely got a different musical score. Like there will be things going on in the movie. There will be just like a cymbal clash in the background. It's really weird. But I think it was trying to give you this anxious anxiety to the film, so you feel like you're part of the soldiers. That's what I got out of it.
Okay.
But it's scored well and it's shot well. And I highly recommend it, man. If you've been looking for something to watch on Netflix, definitely to it. It's a couple hours worth watching. Just a really well-told war movie. I know war movies tend to have, especially in the last few years, they've been, I want to say we went through a period where they were overdone. You know, after Saving Private Ryan, there were a whole lot of them coming out. But there's still good stories to tell about those men and women and the things they went through. And All Is Quiet on the Western Front is definitely worth watching. Then I watched.
I remember the book. I'm pretty hyped. You gave it a pretty good review. And I read the book in school, and I'm going to have to check that out this week. I got a lot of time coming up. It sounds like something I want to check out.
I wouldn't let the kids in the room on it, though, because there's some stuff in it that's just like, it's brutal. I mean, it's up there with Saving Private Ryan as far as its brutality.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
I also watched something on the opposite end of the spectrum. Which is a Michael Bay film, which we know what you're getting. And I watched Ambulance Man with Jake Gyllenhaal, and it's actually pretty good. I liked it. It's typical Michael Bay. It's batshit crazy. It's nonstop action, adrenaline. There's shit in it that doesn't make sense. You're like, this wouldn't happen, that wouldn't happen. But because it's Michael Bay, you just sort of go with it. And I enjoyed the shit out of it, to be honest, man. I just sat back. I watched this last night, and I stayed up to almost 1 a.m. to finish it because I just got into it. I was like, you know what? I'm enjoying this. And nice. And it's crazy. It's if you just want a good, entertaining, crazy action film that you don't have to think too much, or don't try to think too much, because if you do, you'll rip your eyes out. You know, just enjoy it, man, because there's stuff in it. Like, let me put it this way. They try to do surgery on someone while in an ambulance going 60 miles an hour. Right. Mm-mm. That just wouldn't happen.
No.
So it's some crazy stuff like that. You know, it's just a fun action movie. You know, I think Michael Bay is at a point in his career that he's comfortable doing those kind of things. He knows the type of director he is. Michael Bay is never – he's not going to win an Oscar. He knows this. And I think he's okay with that.
No, he's going to entertain you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's going to entertain you, and that's what he does, man. And it was a highly entertaining movie. I enjoyed it, you know. That's all. He shot it during COVID because he was like so tired of being stuck in the house. He goes, "Give me a project. We need to do something." And his agent, they had the script for Ambulance, and he was able to shoot it for like $55 million over like 30 days, really quickly. They use a lot of drones in it to save money. He's like, I own drones, and they shot some things with drones and things like that. So it's really cool. Wow. It's a fun film, man. It's on Amazon Prime. That's where I watched it. And I actually enjoyed it. It was cool. So I checked out a couple movies this week, besides the new episode of Last of Us, which we'll talk about here in a minute.
Yeah. For me, I was laying down and Jackie put on something, and it looked like some weird chick flick.
Wait, that just started out like – that just really just started out like Jackie was laying down. She put on something. Like, wait, what's going on here?
She put on a movie. And
you said something. Something like, could be anything.
Yeah. And so she – I was like, what is this? She's like, oh, it's 47 meters down. I was like, oh, okay, interesting. I said, you know – I was like, it's one of the, it looked like one of those like throwaway shark movies. You know, everyone wants to kind of play off of what Jaws was so successful with the sharks and, you know, eating people. So, you know, I was like, yeah, you know what? Stallone's daughter's in it. There's a couple other, you know, character actors in it, but yeah, Stallone's daughter's in it. And she's actually pretty good in the film. It's kind of like The Meg. It's a thriller.
I still haven't seen The Meg, which I've wanted really? To, I just haven't seen it.
I think The Meg's better, but this is kind of Meg, like The Meg. It's a thriller shark movie, little crazy, but more of like a horror type film. And it follows like five girls. They go diving into a cave, and that which one of the girls' dads is working in, and they're opening up new parts of it. They accidentally open up a part full of sharks that had been stuck down there, and they haven't seen the light in so long they're blind. So the girls have somewhat of a fighting chance, but of course they get picked off one by one. And you'll have to find out how many survive at the end, if any. So watch it. It's free on Netflix. Well, it's on Netflix. I guess it's not free. You're paying for Netflix. So if you're interested in a beast movie like that, kind of a thriller, slasher kind of movie, it's definitely worth watching if you want to be entertained for about an hour and a half. Another movie that I checked out is one that I was told was a really, really good anime movie by Studio Ghibli, and I hadn't watched it yet. And I know Long is super, super high on it, and he was asking me a few questions about it. And that's Grave of the Fireflies. And Mark, I know you had mentioned it's a good movie, but it's one that you might only see once. And I definitely see what you meant by that. You know, if you don't know, it's a film that's based off a time in at the end of World War II, kind of the waning days of World War II in Japan. It follows a brother and sister who have been orphaned. They lose their mom during a bombing in the beginning of the film, and they get separated. Come to find out, their mom's dead. Their father ends up dying in the war. They're orphaned. They feel alienated by their aunt, so they go and they try and live by their own. But the war has, of course, strained a lot of supplies and other things, and they're just trying to survive. And the brother is tasked with not being the brother, but just, you know, but also being the father, being the protector, trying to care for his little sister. Ultimately they don't make it. It just does a really good job of showing the terror of war, the unintended consequences of war, and, how, you know, people who have no say in whether they want to be a part of it, are affected and everything they go through. And, what's even more, heart-wrenching is that it's part of a true story, by a book of the same name. The author lost his 1.5-year-old sister to malnutrition during the same time. And, it's sad, you know, and he wrote this story as a kind of a, to cope with his sister's death and a way to pay tribute to her. You know, as he states, he would go to the sea and get seawater, put it in a bottle, and try and wash the lice off of her body, because she was so malnourished and she had nothing but fireflies to keep her occupied and distracted. And he regrets, he has some regret, because he mentions in an interview that he wished he was like the brother in this Studio Ghibli film and had, you know, maybe pet his sister a little bit more. He was not as kind. So I don't know if, you know, can be a lot for a kid to try and take care of someone like that. Maybe, you know, she annoyed him or something during the time, and maybe he felt guilty about that. But, you know, you're asking a child to be something that they shouldn't have to be, you know, in a rough time. It's pretty sad, man. Movie had me thinking, just thinking about it just these last few days, and just how, you know, big of an that movie can make a really big impact on you. Just make you think differently about things. You know, these people exist. Yeah. You know, these people exist, but you don't, you know, see it portrayed like this. And, Jackie watched it. I had to have her watch it. And she's a very emotional person. She cried for an hour. She's like, I hate you for making me watch this. And I was like, well, it's a good film. She's like, yes, it's a good film, but I hate you for making me watch it. She's like, you know, listening to everything, like, you know, just, you know, I don't want to spoil it. I feel like you have to watch it. You know, and, you know, I know I said that, you know, they both don't make it in the movie. Obviously, you know, it's based off of a bibliography where the writer did make it. But this is, you know, obviously an interpretation of that bibliography. It's just, you know, I didn't realize, of course, it's my first time watching. It kind of starts at the end, at the beginning. And, you know, it's a movie that's, man, I think you might have to see a therapist afterwards, man. It's going to hit you. It's going to hit you pretty hard. It stays with you. Man, it's like, you want to do something, you know, it's like you want to reach in there and help them, you know, but you can't. You've just got to watch the story unfold. So, it's on sale on Vudu right now for $4.99. If you don't have it, this is probably the cheapest way you can get a copy of it. Cause I think every seller on eBay is selling the DVD or Blu-ray for like over $25. So,
yeah, and it pops up a good on way HBO to get Max it. Now and then, whenever they alternate the Studio Ghibli movies on HBO Max, it does pop up on there now and then. It's a honest look at how war affects people outside the soldiers. And, definitely I thought was a spectacular about it is just, using animation to tell a story that's not comfortable to watch, but I think the animation maybe helps put some ease to it to tell such a horrifying story. Cause if, you know, if that makes sense, not that it's easier to take, but, just shows you the power that Studio Ghibli has in their animation, you know, and the way they've told wonderfully amazing stories over the years, you know, from fairy tales to science fiction stories to telling something that's a true life story, like in Grave of the Fireflies, you know. And I watched it, well, I've seen it, and it's a film, man, and it's horrifying and brutal, but it's an important movie, very important movie, you know, and that I think people should watch and should see. And it's a shame sometimes that, you know, after 30 years at Studio, there's still people that haven't seen some of their films. And then you tell them about them, and you're like, you got to watch this. And, you know, I had several people I've tried to turn on to Studio Ghibli films, you know, just because they're such amazing stuff. And a quick note, I didn't have this in my news, but there is a company working on a documentary about Miyazaki's life. And his life work and stuff. And so that should be cool. I read somewhere someone bought up the rights for it to distribute it. It's coming out, I think, later this year. So that'll be cool. Hopefully it's easy to access and available to see his life story in the movies that he made at that studio. So
that would be nice.
From one very depressing movie to a show that is based on a depressing video game. of course. And that is The Last of Us, and depressing in a good way, because, you know, I, you know, when it comes to things like that, like movies that are depressing or sad or make you think, or video games, I think you know, someone asked, you know, as a human, you're like, why do you put yourself through this? And I think it's just, we want to understand, you know, how these people felt. And because we are sympathetic towards soldiers that have fought in war, people that have been through the war and whether it's children or families. And I think in settings like The Last of Us or apocalyptic type settings, you know, we want to kind of maybe just, you know, it's the emotional spectrum. You know, it's, sometimes you want to watch something happy and fun, but sometimes it's okay to watch something that's a little more down and just to understand that situation, you know, if that makes sense. And The Last of Us is just damn good storytelling so far. And in the latest episode, you know, Joel and Ellie continue their journey as they've gone up north a little bit more into, was it Wisconsin? Or maybe? I can't remember what state they were in.
Kind of around there, yeah.
Yeah, and they run into a cabin where an old Indian couple is put themselves away from society all this time. And Joel is just looking for information. You know, he acts like the tough guy, but he's really not going to hurt them. And he's looking for his brother, looking for Tommy, basically. And, you know, and he gets information from them. And really, it's fun, kind of a funny scene where the man's wife really thought Ellie was something else, the way she talked and everything, and very feisty. And so, you know, they just give Joel and Ellie a warning to not go continue west because it's just extremely dangerous and they feel they shouldn't go that way. And Joel's like, well, you know, we're going to do what we have to do anyway. Which was interesting because my one thing with the episode was they warned them not to go west and Joel and Ellie go west anyways. But then there was really, at least in this episode, there was no consequence for it. What was the danger? You know, it's like they made this big, thing like, don't go that way. And they go that way anyway. And they run into the town of Jackson. Well, they're captured by some members of the town of Jackson, and which turns out to be a good thing because Joel runs into Tommy there and Tommy's there and he's reunited with his brother. And, Joel is having some, issues with his hearing and some anxiety issues and are causing him some chest pains, things like that. And he thinks it's best that he leaves Ellie behind lets Tommy send her the rest of the way. Which causes, Joel and Ellie to kind of have an argument with each other after eating some barbecue and hanging out in this town that has almost 300 people in it. Who established it about, I think they said about 8 years ago in the show and trying to get society back to some form of normal as they're fenced in and protected from the infected. And, you know, but then Joel has a change of heart as he realizes it's not the right thing to do. And he wants to go out with Ellie. He goes back with Ellie anyways, but, not before running into some trouble, of course, but it's not infected. It's other humans again. And,
Raiders.
And, the episode ends with Joel getting injured pretty badly and falling out and it's to be continued. And a lot of this episode is right from the game. They changed some things about Jackson. They changed the way Joel was injured, which is funny when they enter that building, and they look around. I thought that was going to happen. They go up in the second floor. See, in the game, they get attacked by Raiders, and Joel falls from the second floor and gets impaled. And then Ellie somehow gets him out. So they did it a little bit differently. When they showed that building, I'm like, oh, here it comes. Joel's going to get hurt. But they didn't do it like that. They did it a little differently. So I knew he was going to get hurt because I'd played the game, so I knew it was coming. But they just did it a little bit differently. They just changed some things about Jackson and – some minor changes here and there, but you know, I think it was all fine. You know, overall, you know, it's, it was a good episode. It was another good episode, very emotional, you know, especially at the end where Ellie's like, I can't do this without you, Joel, you know, you got to wake up. And then of course they leave the audience hanging on the cliffhanger, like motherfucker, you know,
is he going to make it? Yeah.
Like, damn it. That's not fair. It's interesting to see how, you know, we've gone from the beginning of the show to like all these rundown buildings and cars and everything. And now you kind of get into this area up north where it's beautiful and it's lots of snow and it looks like regular society. Run to a couple that's holed up in their cabin. They've been there for years. They've cut themselves off from society. But you run to Jackson, which seems like it's seemingly doing very well for being a small town and getting things back together. So it's almost like, the episode gives you some hope for the future and then rips it away by having Joel get hurt. You're like, what's going on here? That's kind of what I got out of the episode.
Things were going good. You know, looks like they're going to straighten out. The journey is almost over, you know, and then, you know, Joe gets hurt. Joel gets hurt. So it's been left on a cliffhanger, man. Leaving us on a cliffhanger.
My thing too is like they added the Tommy and Marlene, the lady, was her name Marlene? No, it was somebody else. Marlene's the other lady. That's kind of added because I don't remember Tommy having to stay behind because he's having a kid in the future. So they added some stuff like that. Because that was my first thought was like, you know, when you play the video game, you kind of accept the process the game takes you. You have to do this. You have to do this. You don't think too much about story plots in the way.
Yeah.
But in a show, I know Joel doesn't want to reveal that Ellie is immune, but it feels like he could trust his brother enough to tell him, and maybe they would send a couple of people with Joel to help him. You know, it's so it kind of, to me, it's more convenient in the show, like to, okay, we're just not going to tell anybody. We'll just continue to be me and Ellie, you know, and that works in a game, but in the show, it makes you think about like, okay, why doesn't Joel ask for more help? You know, but I guess it's forgivable.
Why does it just have to be him? You know?
Yeah. You know, what'd you think though about the episode?
I thought it was, you have a lot of emotion there because Joel wants Tommy to go with him as well. And so they kind of have an emotional argument over some whiskey, which, hey, at least you're getting Joel, buzzed, you know.
And Joel mourning a little bit more about his daughter and seeing that Nellie, that was all really well done too.
Yeah, that was really good. So it's, and then, you know, finding out what people used to do in a, you know, pre-apocalypse, you know, Tommy's wife was a DA. So, and now she's a cowgirl, you know, but, I think they did a really good job of tying in, the emotional aspect of it as usual. They're good about that. You know, we're left on this cliffhanger. I can't wait to see what happens next. I think we got an episode tomorrow.
Yeah. When it looks up the episode, there was a DLC that came out with the game, which tells a side story of Ellie where she, and her friend Riley before she meets Joel. And I have a feeling from the preview of the episode, that's what it looks like, what they're going to tell. They're going to tell the DLC story. Which is important to the overall story. So it should be interesting. Looks like we'll get some clicker action this episode too. As a fan of the game, I love the show. Don't get me wrong. I want this to sound wrong, but I'm a little disappointed in the lack of infected action. Cause in the game you get quite a bit. And I know it's there in the game for gameplay reasons and to give you more to do in the game, but I feel like the show 5 episodes in has skipped out a little bit on it. We could have at least, I mean, we've had basically 2 scenes, the scene in episode 2 and the scene where they attack all those people when Joel and the sniper and all that. And I feel like we could have had one more scene. Like even when Joel and Ellie were walking, why not have a clicker off in the distance? Just something a little bit more. I feel like, and I know they're trying to make the show not about, you know, it's about Joel and Ellie and their journey, but I just feel like there was more in the game. I feel like you're skipping a little bit in the show. But I can forgive it. Small quip. Like I said, I'm still loving the show a lot.
That's one thing I would like. I know they've got a lot of story to tell, I'm sure. I guess they're just going to scale out, you know, some of the fights that they could probably have with the infected. But I would like to see more. I'm with you on that one. I'd like to see more fights with the infected. I'd like to see them, you know, take down some of that. And, you know, because I feel like it's been like episodes before we've seen some good infected action. We're getting like nice scenes, you know.
Right.
But we haven't had like a steady income on that, you know.
Yeah. So I'm sure we'll get there. All right, man. Well, look forward to tomorrow night's episode for sure, which will be out by time by time our audience hears our show, but that's okay. All right, before we get today's featured film, let's knock out some news, man. Warner Brothers wants to make more Lord of the Rings movies. My first thought when I read this was like, why? Why? and apparently they're not, there's no remakes or anything like that. They just want to tell more stories in this universe. But why? You know, we saw how the Hobbit movies turned out when you tried to add a bunch of stuff into them from the similarity and other stories. They were good. You know, I enjoy the Hobbit movies, but they're not as good as the Lord of the Rings movies. Let's just be honest. We see how Rings of Power is received in the first season, which I still haven't finished. It's maybe you're trying to milk this too much. You know, I guess they are going to have Peter Jackson possibly involved as a consultant towards making new Lord of the Rings movies. But I just feel like no one's asking for this. No one wants to hear, you know, no one's to tell that you see the original story of Saruman or any of that. I think people are generally satisfied with what we got from the original Lord of the Rings films. And sometimes it's just less is more.
And, you know, I wouldn't mind. I don't think I would mind seeing, you know, the Silmarillion broken up into three parts. Sauron's rise to power and how he came to be on that throne. I think that could work. But on the other hand, what you said, you know, it's like leave well enough alone. You created three great films. People still watch them religiously. You've got your, you know, a friggin' religious sect that praises those movies. You know, it's almost kind of like how almost you got like LARP, I guess. You know, that would be you got the LARPers, you know, and they're probably big into that. So you know, just stop while you're ahead, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
But exactly. Hey, you know, if you're gonna try and come in and do it right and you're gonna bring in Peter Jackson, maybe some more quality personnel, you know, maybe well, some.
He ain't doing nothing anyway.
Yeah, Jackson. I don't think he can't be working on much. No. But if it's done right, I think it can look good. I think it can be good. Just have to see what happens. See what they give us.
So the Flash is going to have its world premiere. Well, maybe not world premiere officially, but it's going to be shown at CineCon next month, which is the big studio conference where they buy movies for the year and how many theaters they want to show them in and all that. And they're going to show it to theater owners. They'll get their first look at it. And which isn't generally common for tentpole films, because generally tentpole films sell themselves. You know, theater owners are ready to show them anyway, but they want to get the word of mouth out. And I think this is definitely I believe James Gunn. I think if James Gunn says the movie is good, it's probably good. But I think it's also, this is like, hey, look, we want y'all to see we have a good movie, even though Ezra Miller has this public battle with his problems. We want theater owners to know ahead of time that you're going to have a good product. I think that's why they're showing it at CineCon. So hopefully it turns out good. Stay with DC for a minute. Matt Reeves is pretty much 90% confirmed that the Batman Part 2 is going to start shooting this November. So that's interesting. I think that means we'll get casting soon for new roles and things like that. As we get closer to the sequel to my favorite movie of last year. So we'll see. Now we're going to switch over to Marvel. I didn't even know they were making a Venom 3. I mean, I guess it makes sense that they're successful, but Tom Hardy pretty much revealed in an interview that pre-production has begun and that he expects to start shooting in the next couple of months. I was like, okay. I mean, I like Carnage, the second movie, like, for what it was, but you know, I'm like, yeah, do we need more Venom movies? It's like, let's get Venom in the MCU, which they hinted at, and let's get there first. Yeah. Like, do we need another Venom movie between now and when he shows up at the MCU?
Probably not. Work him into a film, you know?
Yeah. It's like, you know, I don't know. We'll see. But it's a cash cow for them, so why not? Hellboy. is going to get another reboot, another rated R reboot. Man, I just read this and I'm like, what is Universal? You know, you had Ron Perlman and Guillermo del Toro sitting there a couple years ago like, hey, look at us. We want to make Hellboy 3. No, we don't want you to make Hellboy 3. We're going to go get someone else to make Hellboy. And it failed. I watched about 15 minutes of the reboot and I was done. I was like, this is stupid. And now you're going to try again to reboot it. It's like, why? I don't know, Universal Pictures doesn't understand the property they have there.
You had a good portrayal of the Hellboy with Ron Perlman. You had a top 10 director, I would say. A top 10 director out of what you've got out there. And you're just like, you know what? I'm going to try the other guy, you know? I don't know what they're doing.
Me neither. The last bit of news before we get into the feature film is Jon Favreau was talking some Mando this week as we get ready for season 3 to kick off on Wednesday. And that he said he's already pretty much about 60% of season 4 written. And he was like, well, yeah, we got to know where we're going ahead of time. And he also kind of revealed that it's funny because a couple years ago he said he kind of had an idea where everything was leading to. And it was going to be a big event where all these stories. Now he's like, no, we don't really have any plan for Mandalorian. We're just going season by season. It's like, wait, which was it, dude? but at the same time, I'm okay with that, man. I really enjoy the show. I can watch many years of Star Wars and Mandalorian. And looking forward to Wednesday, definitely, man. I really am. I can't wait to get home Wednesday and sit down and watch the season premiere of season 3. Seems like it's been a long time since we've seen him. You know, even though he was in Boba Fett last year, it just feels like it's been a while since we've. It's like revisiting old friends. So,
pretty much.
Looking forward to that. And you hear the rumor that Boba Fett's going to appear in the season 2, which I'm really not surprised by that because after the events of the Boba Fett series, you kind of just can't like make him disappear. I kind of not surprised he might show up. So
we'll see. He's got to.
All right. Today's featured film, which is I requested on our Facebook group, which you can link to through the rebelradiopodcast.com. What movies people want us to do this year. And we got a few suggestions. And this was one of them from our friend of the show, Matt. And this is a film that came out in 1990, even though it was shot in 87. We'll get to that in a minute, why it took 3 years to come out. And this is a little known film, except in certain circles. Most genre people that are into sci-fi have heard of this film. They've probably even seen it. And that is Robot Jocks. Man, I remember seeing this.
All nations are dead except for Russia and the USA. War has been outlawed. And instead, we have athletes fight each other with giant robots for rule over territory.
That's the summary of the film. I mean, basically, you know, this movie, it's been some years since I've seen it. I do remember watching it. It's probably been 30 years since I've watched it. So I was very young. And first off, it was supposed to come out in 87. But the studio that financed this movie was going bankrupt. And this movie was kind of causing them to go bankrupt because it was one of the most expensive movies they made. And so they didn't really have a release pattern for it. They tried to put it out in 88, but then 88 got swamped. Then they tried to put it out in 89. 89 got swamped. Finally, the film was finished, and they put it out in 1990. And it
by Empire absolutely Productions.
Absolutely bombed at the box office. Nobody saw the thing. But then in the 2000s, it saw a renaissance through some DVDs, and then it got a Blu-ray release, and it kind of became a kind of a cult classic. Now, when I say cult classic, I always lose. Some movies are true cult classics, like Buckaroo Banzai and The Crow,
Roadhouse,
and things like that. Roadhouse, I'll give Roadhouse credit. But there's something generally about those films that make them a cult classic. They have their audiences, and they have some redeeming value to them. I don't know if Robot Jocks is one of those, because overall this movie's kind of bad, but overall it's also kind of fun.
Yeah.
I think it's got a lot of really great ideas in it. like really cool fucking ideas, but they just don't really come together right, either because of the budget on the film or really terrible acting in some scenes. I think that affects it a lot, and just story plots that just don't make sense at all. You know, like you're supposed to fight these Russians, right? And you're fighting over territories, but yet you're hanging out in the same bar with the Russians. Like, wait, you all live in the same area? I was confused by that. You know, it's like,
yeah, it's kind of weird. Think about that. Alexander, he walks into that bar. Well, if it isn't Achilles.
So yeah, essentially Achilles is like the US's greatest fighter and Alexander's like Russia's greatest fighter. And, you know, they basically swing their dicks around most of the movie about who's going to win the fight at the end. And we literally get a fight at the beginning.
And one of them's a chainsaw dick that comes out of the robot.
Yes.
The robot has a chainsaw dick.
You had never seen this before.
No,
you had never seen it before till now.
No,
When I was watching it the other day, I'm like, man, that's got to be laughing at some of this. Because, like, it's relatively enjoyable if you just take it for what it is. But then there's parts of it that are pretty cringeworthy. You're like, God, this is bad. Special effects are actually pretty good, even for 1987. I think they
I want to know who
well.
Idea the chainsaw dick was. Was there a German guy in the room? I want him to have a chainsaw penis.
I know. And this movie is
chainsaw dick.
And the crazy thing is it's PG, but yet it's got a naked chick in it. It's got people getting burnt alive when the robot falls on them. It's got the chainsaw.
Yeah.
It's like, and
what did you say?
Sons of bitches.
A chainsaw dick. Like, no, that's crazy. Like, let me show you. You goddamn it. Chainsaw dicks. That's what we need. Make it happen.
And
they fucking got bankrupt. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone doesn't know, you can watch this on Pluto or Tubi for free. And, you know, it's only an hour and a half. It's a quick watch. And actually, it's for a movie, it's paced pretty well. I never got bored watching it, you know, at all. It's fun. You know, it's got fun moments. The lead actor, I can't remember his name off top. He's just hamming it up throughout the film. The guy who plays Big Tex is absolutely hamming it up the film the whole time.
Oh, big time.
No one's really trying at all in this movie to fucking act. You know, they're just like, they're reading these lines that are poorly written and put together to try to tell the story about these robots fighting. And definitely the coolest parts of the movie are the robots, for sure. But at the same time, I can see why this movie kind of has a somewhat of a cult following, has its fans, because it's got that campy classic feel to it. Like a lot of these kind of movies do, like Flash Gordon and other stuff. But it's not amongst the best of those camp classics. It's probably more amongst the bottom end of things. But nonetheless, it's fairly enjoyable.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you've got, you know, this film was supposed to be a futuristic rendition of the Lilac. So that's why you have people named Athena, Hercules, Achilles. But of course, there were so many changes. It didn't really get depicted as that. So instead, you've got robot jocks. And I like what they did here. They couldn't name it BattleTech, but they're going to bring the writer of the BattleTech of BattleTech and bring him over as a consultant. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They did. It's like, I don't know if that was like before they ran out of money or after. It had to have been before. I think it was before. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And then you've got the horrible martial arts in here. But, you know, they've spent so much money on suits and mechs.
Right.
You know, that they just, you know, they probably just didn't have enough money to choreograph.
They tried to get Van Damme to do the movie. So he had a real martial artist. Yeah.
Yeah. That would have worked. And you know what else is funny? So to elaborate, you've got Hercules, the beginning fight is between Alexander and Hercules. And Hercules loses. So the next continent that's up for claim is Alaska, and they just can't let Alaska fall. Apparently, they've got to save all the salmon. There's all these salmon in Alaska. You've got to save them, the bears and the salmon and the ice fishermen, I guess. So there's all kinds of cool shit in Alaska. And Achilles has fought 9 fights, and the contract is for 10 fights whenever you're a robot jock. So his 10th fight, he's going to fight Alexander. And someone has been leaking secrets this whole time. And then there's these test tube babies, which is what Athena is. They specially make people now to be robot jocks. People that are made in a lab, no father, no mother. And they even ask Tex and Achilles to give them some raw materials. You know, they talk about shooting their jizz in a fucking test tube and handing it to this lady. And so that's another thing. This is kind of weird. But anyways, there's a fight between Alexander and Achilles, the 10th fight. In a crazy accident with a rocket fist, Achilles trying to block this rocket fist from going into the stands of these people who are wearing M95 masks. So I guess COVID's so fucking prolific that it has made its way into this movie even. So the robot that Achilles is operating falls on the stand and just crushes all kinds of people. It's horrible. He probably should have just let that damn thing fly on its own.
And Trent Reznor sampled the screams of the people in his song The Becoming. Yeah.
Really?
So Trent Reznor, at some point in his life, imagine Trent Reznor sitting down fucking watching Robot Jocks. And it's like, that I'm going to sample awesome. Those screams in a song.
Yeah. God damn. So there's a trial, and the people in the trial are fucking not empathetic at all. They're like, we are truly sorry about all the people that have died, but fuck you. We're not going to rule on that. It's like, it's okay. You died. Just, you know, you can cry. You can go cry somewhere. That's about it. And they say that it's a draw. There's going to have to be another fight where Achilles is like, I've done my 10 fights, buddy. I'm done. So he didn't feel like he's obligated to fight anymore. So Athena's back up. Once Athena gets put into the job, you know, he's like, oh, I'm not going to let Athena fight. I guess he's got some crush on her or something. So he comes back. Athena drugs him and dresses as him and tries to get into the mech, but not before one of the other techs slaps her on the butt and she turns around like, you know, and to give him some slack about, you know, smacking her on the butt. And he's like, hey, that's not Achilles. That's so I'm like, okay. So I'm like, what's going through this guy's head? Hey, Achilles likes it when I smack his ass. This person, right? You're an imposter. Achilles loves it when I spank those luscious cheeks of his. So she turns around and gives it away, but tries to fight Alexander. And then, you know, she gets knocked down in the fight. Achilles comes to, hops in the mech himself, and it ends in this weird fist bump. Just he's right. Like, you know what? Let's like, just have a cool ass fist bump at the end.
We don't have to die. Yeah. And then that was my thing. Okay, when Athena falls back and she's all moving in the chair and stuff. They have this super tech for this robot, right? You couldn't have secured them better when they fall over. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem very good. Your robot jock falls over, but you don't have a way to make him get up easily because your tech is poorly designed. You're just going to flap around I can't get up. I fall and I can't get up.
Yeah, for real. And what's crazier, you talk about the design. They even move slow. So it's like they can't. I don't think they can really dodge each other's attacks, anyways. They're like, all right, now just stand there and take it. It's like fighting in the Revolutionary War where you're just like, you just fired at each other. You didn't like try and dodge. You just marched towards the enemy and just kept loading and firing. And like it's like a Revolutionary War fight, but except just between two mechs, and that's it. They're just firing at each other.
Well, Stuart Gordon was inspired. Stuart Gordon, the director, was inspired by the Transformers, essentially, and they were they straight up admitted they were trying to cash in on the robot craze. But by the time the movie came out, Transformers had gone off the air. The movie had come and gone. The robot craze was kind of moving on to new things in the 90s, Ninja Turtles and things like that. It just never caught on, and it didn't help that it's overall a fairly poorly constructed movie. And they even had a sequel plan for it, which, get this, the robot jocks have been fighting aliens. How does that even make fucking sense? You go from fighting for territories to fighting aliens. It's like, that was his idea at one point, though. But that being said, as ridiculous as this movie sounds, for some reason, it's really watchable because you just watch it as a camp movie. It's got some really bold, like, I think it really has some great ideas in it. It really does. I mean,
oh, definitely, man.
If you put the ideas together, I mean, it definitely has some Cold War sensibilities, being late 80s film, during the Cold War, Russia versus America. But you could take those ideas and then expand on them you could remake this movie and probably make it better with the bold ideas and today's technology and special effects. And you could make a really cool fucking mech movie, if you really put your ideas together.
Yeah, dude. And we'd have to have Pedro Pascal play Achilles.
He plays
Pedro Pascal and everything. He plays right. All the good guys. And then I could see him. I've done my fights. I'm ready to go home. And then, there's a girl, and there's a test tube baby. So she's got like all the super reflexes and stuff. So she's a gifted child. He'd have to save her. Right. He's always saving gifted. It's perfect. So Pedro Pascal does it.
No, did you see he doesn't like to do the Mando voice for people at conventions and things because he says it's creepy? He goes, dude, the Mando voice is
what?
Because I talk really low and I try to do it just for fun. It sounds like I'm being creepy, so he doesn't like to do it.
That's funny. But, that's like Seth Green doesn't like doing Chris Griffin's voice because he has to like contort his face in a weird way and talk, and he doesn't like doing it for people.
You could remake Robot Jocks and be Pedro versus Chris Hemsworth. Mexico.
Is he Mexican? Yeah, dude.
Versus Australia. Hemsworth Australian? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know. We're just being ridiculous now, but.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this feels. Have Zoe Saldana be Athena. Yeah. There we go.
This just feels like one of those 80s flicks that. You really could remake this into something special if you really had the right story idea. Well,
dude, look at today's Pacific tech. Rim, man.
Yeah.
You could make mechs that look badass, man.
Yeah, and Pacific Rim is badass. Because this isn't, like I said, it's a movie that didn't come together right and doesn't work the way it should have, but it's full of great ideas, great concepts. Like I said, I'll give it an A. I'd give the special effects for its time a pretty solid A. I mean, the effects are good. I think they hold up pretty well despite the slow moving robots. I think the movie,
that's fair.
It's an ambitious film. It really is for its time.
Yeah, very ambitious.
Just doesn't come together maybe the way it should have overall. But it was fun to watch. I'm glad Matt suggested it because when he said it on our Facebook group, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that movie. I haven't watched that in many years and I rewatched it. And I'm like, oh, I now remember why I haven't rewatched it in many years. It's just not that great, but it's a fun watch, I'm not upset we watched it. It was a cool one to watch and to cover,
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it was very very easy to watch, very easy to follow, and of course you throw in a little bit of ridiculousness in there. It just makes it, it just makes it nice to watch.
We forgot it's got Silto from Karate Kid 2 in it, Yeah.
Really?
That's Silto from Karate Kid 2.
The other Mr. Miyagi's genetically modified.
No, the Japanese guy. It's Mr. Miyagi's mentor in Karate Kid 2.
Oh, yeah. The guy who exposes Tex.
Yes. That's him.
Yeah. That's okay. And, that's why he looked familiar.
This is the Texas one racist son of a bitch in this movie. We didn't mention that. He's all like, that Jap son of a bitch, and he's got to be the spy. And I'm like, God dang, could you be more racist than this? But yeah, you watch some of these old movies like that, you get some of that stuff, you know? And
yes.
It is what it is.
That is what it is, man. Product of the time.
But Robot Jocks. Watch it if you want on Tubi. It's fun, man. It's a camp classic. I could give it that, you know.
Absolutely, man. It's not a waste of your time. Watch it. That way you can say you watched it, and your life will be more enriched having seen a chainsaw penis. Yeah.
Well, I'll just leave it at that. So next week, next week's movie, man, let's get to it. I've been reading some early reviews of the third one that's coming out, and man, it's getting really well reviewed.
That's awesome, man.
Saying Michael B. Jordan knocks it out of the park again, that it's really well reviewed. I don't know if I'll necessarily see it in theaters, cause you know, it's one of those movies that kids wouldn't be interested. So I might just wait for it. But, of course, next week, Creed 3 hits theaters. So we're going to go back and we're going to revisit where Adonis' journey begins in the original film directed by Ryan Coogler. And that is Creed.
Daddy died in the ring.
I don't know him. Ain't got nothing to do with me. I've been fighting my whole life. It's not a choice for me. Every punch I ever thrown has been on my own. Nobody showed me how to do this. I'm ready. Wives in the fry of a mold weather. Better medic, caviar bar, I'm an old desert. Dirty needles breaking all the old records. 100 holes, 1 shovel, that's an old treasure. Old seat, you Steve, that's a gold tester. Figaro's finger waves, passing from the old level. This picture's from the 10th round of the first fight, right? I heard about a third fight between you and Apollo. Behind closed doors. Is that true?
How do you know all this?
I'm a son. And wear gloves for the reason why I gate ties. Skate thugs going crazy in a cage box. Looking at the world through the TV, a day room, rapping over beats. But they fight with the key. They made electric chairs for his dying day. Last meals, no pills for him to try and stay. Death row like Suge in a late pot. Maybe he could dig a tunnel while the A block. A great fighter once said, it ain't about how hard you can hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
See this guy here? That's the toughest opponent you're ever going to have to face. I believe that's true in the ring, and I think that's true in life. Now show me something.
And this is a movie that I admittedly slept on when it came out. I was like, do we need a Rocky spinoff? You know, I'm like, I just felt, the Rocky films were what they were. Do we really need more? And then I watched it and I immediately fell in love with it. It's just such a really well done film. And the sequel is good too. So we'll go back next week and we'll discuss, Rocky and Adonis's coming together in this film and their journey as as Adonis learns to find his way after finding out his, or coming to terms with his legacy of who he is. I think that's a good way to put it in Creed.
That's a good way to put it.
So I'm kind of looking forward. It's been a bit since I watched the first one. So sit down this week and watch it, and we'll discuss Creed next week. I know you're a fan, too, of the film. So.
Oh, big time, man. I mean, I think the way that they were able to draw the line between, you know, Rocky Balboa, you know, Rocky Six, essentially, and make this into Creed, and how Michael B. Jordan's kind of turned this into his own thing now. It's nice. And it's very cool. We're going to touch base on it next week.
Yeah, for sure. And so it'll be fun. So that's next week in the show. We'll discuss Creed. I'm not sure if it's streaming anywhere, but I mean, I own a copy of it, so no biggie. So that's next week. All right. Until then, man, the RebelRadioPodcast.com. Find us on all the apps, of course, and join our Facebook group, follow us on Twitter, and all that good stuff. And we thank you, as always, for listening. Of course, continue to be safe out there. And until next week, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Until next time, remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Just go there and do it.